Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report, where Teddy won't be our Valentine. Hey, Ryan, you see what I did there? Yeah? Anyways, I am Tyler Hayward. The Red Cedar Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Red Cedar Report to listen to our past shows. Today on the show, iSports Web contributor Ryan McCumber, whose laugh you already heard, joins me as we talk about how last night may have impacted whether or not Josh Jackson comes to East Lansing. But first, we're going to take a look at last night's game. Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How about you, Tyler?
You okay? You good? You ready to do this?
I'm good.
We got a show to do. Okay.
All right, man.
All right, let's get your thoughts on the game last night. What are your initial thoughts?
You know, Michigan State got clobbered in the first half. But Purdue probably played the best basketball they played all year. You know, I mean, Purdue is not that good of a match. Is not a good matchup for Michigan State. You know, Purdue isn't a good matchup for most teams. With their bigs down low, and you know, Michigan State got in foul trouble at the end of the game, and that's what ultimately killed them. I mean, you can't have two of your better bigs foul out and expect to win an overtime game with Purdue, especially with their size.
Yeah, and I mean, you just look at certain plays throughout the game. I mean, the size was the only thing that made the difference. I thought ultimately Michigan State played the better game. And despite the fact that at one point the Spartans were down 18, you know, you sit there and you watch that game and you're like, Rafael Davis, he's got 19 points in the first 15 minutes of the game. But Bryn Forbes had a hand in Davis' face. Like, you just knew the law of averages would kind of pulling back down to earth, if you know what I mean. And so you knew Michigan State was going to make a run. At least I did. I thought they were going to make a run. Like the result showed, I didn't know if they were going to win it. But I thought they could make a run. I thought they looked good when they did. They did a good job trying to make the outside guys beat them. Ultimately, it didn't happen. I thought there were a couple whistles in overtime. I'm not going to say in the rest of the game because they let them play for the most part, both teams. There were a couple whistles in overtime that I thought were a little too sensitive given how the rest of the game went. Now, I understand that there's bad refs out there, and I understand that if you're a ref, the thing I've always heard is if nobody knows your name, you're in good shape. Teddy Valentine was reffing last night. So I felt that, look, I mean, there's going to be bad calls. Ultimately, though, players do win and lose games. And on that last play, look, I thought it was a moving screen with Hammonds. I thought he kind of bumped Valentine as he was sliding out, and he kind of stuck his arm out there a little bit. But at the same time, why is Valentine going over the screen 10 feet away from the three-point line? Is my question. You're not trying to guard Steph Curry.
Right. I totally agree with you on that. I mean, refs, I mean, Pat Driscoll and Ted Valentine are terrible officials. They are consistently awful. But at the same time, you can't go over a screen like that 10 feet away from the basket. If Purdue beats Michigan State on a desperation shot, okay, sure, fine. But, I mean, that was probably a moving screen on Hammonds, and they called that most of the game, and then, you know, they don't call it. I mean, you're not going to get that call at Mackey. It's just the way it is. You're not going to get that call on the road. And I agree with you. With Rafael Davis just went off the first half, and that was not going to – they weren't going to be able to sustain that. I thought Michigan State would make a run at some point, and they did. You know, it's just Michigan State, they missed dunks, multiple dunks that they should have made. And you can't blow a 4-point lead with 2 minutes to go in a game on the road. You just can't do that. I mean, they've done that twice this year. They did that at Wisconsin, and then they did that at Purdue. You cannot do that. And, you know, there was still an outside shot at a Big Ten title. That's gone. So at this point, you just need to win out, play for seeding, and see how it goes from there. And, you know, looking at the rest of Michigan State's schedule, I think they should win the rest of their games in the Big Ten season.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about Purdue again. They're obviously done with Iowa, thank God. But, I mean, you're right. They didn't play that great. One of the things that's been brought up this season, I don't know why it's magically this season, because Tom Izzo's 20 years. That Tom Izzo needs to loosen up. Well, at the end of games, this is the second time he's not used the timeout. And in both of those situations, Michigan State limped out with a loss. And so you wonder why someone who is so good at drawing baseline out-of-bounds plays, sideline out-of-bounds plays up. He usually gets the shot that he wants, but you sit there and you have all of these armchair point guards who want to sit there and tell him, hey, he needs to open up. He needs to let Aaron Harris flow. He needs to do whatever. It's bull crap because what Izzo's been doing has worked for 2 decades. Why is it going to change now?
And why in the world, once again, I don't know how many times we've said this season, why in the world are people questioning a Hall of Fame coach who's been to 7 Final Fours? And these people don't even have a coaching job, more than likely. What are you doing questioning what he does? He knows what he's doing. He figures it out every year. You know, I questioned him a lot last year. He proved me wrong. I mean, I'm not doing it again, man. It's just ridiculous. Some people never learn. I do not get it.
Well, it only took you 19 years of Izzo for you to figure it out. But to be fair, you are younger, so I'll cut you a little bit of slack. That's the thing is he realized that he does need to change a little bit, and so he's making adjustments to it, but at the same time, you can't go too far in the other direction and let the kids play like you're getting Kentucky-level recruits, because that's not what these kids are. Ultimately, I think Forbes and Valentine would both play very well for Kentucky, but in Costello, but I don't know what else you have on the team that could go up there. Deontay Davis, but I mean, after that, there's not much left.
Right.
Tom Izzo's been the difference maker, and so he's trying to adjust with the new style of player that is starting to come up that's changed over the last 20 years. Now everyone wants to be like Steph. Before that, they wanted to be like Mike. Or before
right.
that, they want to be like LeBron. Before that, they wanted to be like Mike. So there's different styles of players coming up. And ultimately, it's more of a free-flowing game, and it suits those styles of players. And so they expect free-flowing. Tom Izzo, he runs his offense the way he wants it run. He runs his plays the way he wants it run. He runs his practices the way he wants it run. And he doesn't let it be as free-flowing. And so I think that's what people want to see, but that's not what you're going to get, because that's not what's worked for Izzo.
Let me bring something up. Caleb Swanigan was going to come to Michigan State, and he threw up one of the most ill-advised shots I've seen with that three-pointer with about, 6 seconds to go. If he does that under Tom Izzo probably doesn't let him play most of the rest of the game, but, Matt Painter is Matt Painter, so he played. I mean, you can tell the difference between Izzo and most coaches in the country. He did, no matter who you are, if you do something stupid, you're not going to play.
Right, and I kind of want to talk to you about the Swanigan thing. He sat there, he threw up the shot. I think you're absolutely right. I don't think he sees the floor again, which brings us to our next topic, which is Aaron Harris, who did not see much of the floor last night after a couple of errant plays. There's a sequence there that we were kind of talking about. I can't remember the order of it. And I don't remember what time it was, but there was 3 straight offensive possessions where he dribbled into A.J. Hammonds on one, threw away a pass on, threw away a pass on another after he had Bryn Forbes open on the wing. Bryn Forbes, obviously Michigan State's best three-point shooter. You need to get him going after the fact he started off cold. And then the final one, he had that two-on-one fast break with Deontay Davis, threw it to Davis, and didn't give him any room to do anything with the ball, which you have a two-on-one. You can go in, you get an and-one, you make the defender make the first move, but that's like a quarterback, that's like a quarterback throwing a football to a wide receiver, him getting just his fingertips on it before a safety comes in and takes his head off. Like, you can't give a basketball player no room to maneuver and at least even put the ball down, or else you are going to get called for trouble, and that's what happened. That's why Izzo yelled at Harris instead of Davis for that play.
Right, and, you know, Harris was like that a lot of West Virginia. You know, he'd have nights where he goes off for, like, 30 points, and he'll make a stupid mistake here or there. And, you know, Harris, he might be the best athlete on the team. I mean, it's either him or Davis.
Yeah, without question.
And, you know, he has so much potential. You know, I think that he could potentially be a lottery pick if he gets his crap together. But he just makes so many stupid decisions. You know, he's either one game he's going to go, he's either going to be really good or he's going to be really bad. We've talked about this multiple times this year. And you saw bad Aaron Harris last night. And when he's bad, he's really bad. He made three really stupid decisions. He's lucky he didn't throw away the ball and coming up the floor. You know, Izzo's not going to put up with that. He doesn't have the patience for it. And that's how he wins the games. He doesn't put up with stupid crap. And if Harris is going to continuously do that, he's not going to see the floor much.
And which brings me to our next point. Is it time to maybe start looking at Matt McQuaid over Aaron Harris?
You know, I think Harris, I mean, he's inconsistent, but you're going to get games out of him, like the Maryland game where he has a big game and then he'll play really good defense. But at the same time, you're going to get a lot of, you know, sometimes you'll get a Purdue game out of him where he plays stupid and doesn't do anything much scoring-wise. But I think you've got to give Harris the nod just because of experience. But at the same time, McQuaid does deserve more minutes. But I question him being able to create his own shot. I think Harris is better at creating his own shot. But the question is if Harris can consistently do it. But I think I'd give Harris more minutes. I'm a big Aaron Harris fan, but at the same time, his consistency is frustrating.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm coming from is, do you maybe want that inconsistency coming off the bench? Because for me, I think Matt McQuaid's a solid starter. I think he's obviously better at setting up the offense, kind of takes a little pressure off Valentine to start the game, which we did kind of see an issue with last night. And so that's why I would like to see, if McQuaid doesn't start, I want to see him get starter minutes over Aaron Harris. Not with Aaron Harris or even with Aaron Harris, because if you look at it, Harris did have 20 minutes last night, but that was in part because he played like complete crap. McQuaid had 25. He did get more minutes, and I think that's the type of thing that Michigan State needs moving forward, because this kid, he's 18 years old. He's a true freshman. He's playing out of position, but guess what? He's not afraid at the moment. You can go back to big shots against Kansas, had some big ones last night, hit a couple of nail-in-the-coffin-type shots against Michigan. And so I think that might be the way to go moving forward, especially as we start getting closer to March. Are you going to sit there and have a guy who's not afraid at the moment, even though he is a freshman, play? Or are you going to have Aaron Harris, who I'm not going to say he is afraid at the moment, but he makes mistakes you don't want in the moment. And I think that's ultimately the difference.
And, you know, the good thing about that is we still have six games to see what's going to happen. you know, and, you know, including the Big Ten tournament, because, you know, Tom Izzo still tinkers then. So, I mean, we'll see. Right now, I'd agree with you that McQuaid deserves more minutes, but at the same time, I'm not sold it's going to be he can sustain what he's done as a freshman, you know. And I think that I think Aaron Harris has the potential to be the second or third option. But the question is, can he do so? And, you know, there's still time to figure it out. He can still tinker with everything. At this point, you know, they're not going to win the Big Ten championship, so he can just tinker. It's what he does.
Well, kind of sticking with the same topic, just different players. Is it time for Kenny Goins to start seeing more time over Deontay Davis?
You know, it was one game where, you know, Kenny goes off and, you know, he owned Swanigan, if we're being honest. He straight up owned him. But I think Davis has played, I mean, the last two games he hasn't played well, but he has played pretty well this year. I think you got to give Davis more minutes, but I'm not sure Kenny Goins can sustain that type of play. I know what I'm getting out of Deontay Davis. I'm getting a big athletic big, and, you know, he can score, block shots. But, you know, I don't know if I can get Goins to play like that consistently.
It's the same thing for me that it is with McQuaid and Harris, and that's the only reason why I brought them both up is I feel with Goins and McQuaid, you get a little more consistency. You don't get the up and down of it all. I feel that Davis and Harris would just be incredible spark plugs off of the bench, which ultimately with Gavin Schilling being the only other guy who sees a ton of minutes off of the bench right now, I think that is a big factor in it because you need to get maybe some explosiveness to go with Schilling's defense and rebounding. That's just one of the things. It's like, I can't remember what year it was. It was one of Kobe's first years. They had Eddie Jones in over Kobe Bryant. Eddie Jones was on the decline. Kobe Bryant was coming into his own. Kobe Bryant was turning into the superstar that we all know and love or hate today. So, and they had Kobe coming off the bench. Kobe was a sixth man because it gave him that scoring. Michigan State, 1999, had Morris Peterson coming off the bench, doing Big Ten Player of the Year that year. I'm not saying Aaron Harris or Davis will win Big Ten Player of the Year, obviously, because that goes to Utah or Denzel. But I think having that explosiveness off the bench is pivotal moving forward.
But the thing with Harris is his scoring output off the bench has not been good this year. I mean, he scores more as a starter, and that's the thing that worries
right.
about me. If he can go on.
But what I'm saying is lately he has struggled. Lately he has struggled, whether he's in the starting lineup, coming off the bench, or coming from the stand.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, but at the same I don't know if he can, if you put him on the bench, I don't know how you're going to respond. That's the thing that worries about it. You know, I just don't know if he's going to respond right. And that's the thing with Harris is, you know, if he's frustrated, I don't know what it is with him. He's just an inconsistent player, and it's frustrating because you know how well he can play.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention a little bit to the bench. It looks like it's going to be without Nairn for a little while longer. Latest thing saying he might be out in a month. He might end up playing like up to 5 minutes or whatever if someone gets into foul trouble. Which means that, and this is another reason why I thought maybe McQuaid should come in, even though he's not a natural point guard. which means Denzel Valentine is going to carry the load. And last night, you saw early on, it affected his game. Later on, he did get used to it, but Purdue also backed off their press as much.
Yeah, and MSU, as much as people complain about Nairn and his offensive output, you know, it's pretty obvious that they're missing him. And he can run the point and run the offense better than anybody else can. And his defense is really good. But, I mean, it's pretty impressive what they've done without a true point guard. They've lost some games, but at the same time, most teams cannot do that without a true point guard, and Michigan State has. Nairn is severely missed, as much as people don't want to admit it.
Right, and the thing about him, too, is, okay, yeah, 4 points game on offense, 37-38% from the field, whatever, not a big deal. But if he can sit there and he can push the ball against Purdue's break, or against Purdue's press, I mean, obviously you would have someone up front guarding him, meeting him at about the free throw line and escorting him up the floor. But if he can get around that guy, he can hit Bryn Forbes, who's already cutting to the corner and beating Purdue's defense back. And that type of thing could have got Bryn Forbes going last night. That type of thing could have got Aaron Harris going last night, as he could have slashed to the basket. And so that's what you miss from the offense. They haven't played much as far as zone teams go, but despite their ability to shoot the three, they've struggled beating zones. Nairn is the only guy who has really taken it in to those types of defenses. He's really forced them to change their game plan. He's the only one who's done it. Because guys like Costello and Goins and Schilling, Clark, whoever it is that Tom Izzo has in the middle of the zone, they don't make the plays that Draymond Green used to be able to, that Adrian Payne used to be able to. They don't draw the attention that those guys do. And, I mean, it's not a shot on Costello. Costello's obviously been an All-Big Ten caliber player this year. It's just not a playmaker in that regard. And so they do miss Nairn. They miss him a lot. They'll need him, because can Denzel shoulder the load the rest of the season? Can he be the point guard, get 25 points, get 9 rebounds, get 7 assists a game?
I don't think he can, because, you know, Draymond Green couldn't even do that they lost in the Sweet 16. And I really don't see Michigan State making a big run. Nairn isn't healthy and playing up to par, and that's one thing that worries me. However, at the same time, another point to bring up about Nairn missing is last night, if he's playing, I think MSU probably tires Haas, Hammonds, and Swanigan down a lot, because, you know, I don't think they can keep up Michigan State running consistently.
Right. And they do have to take their foot off the accelerator without him, because even then, you have Valentine and McQuaid who run your point. Neither of those guys are natural point guards. I mean, Valentine might end up moving that direction as moves on to the NBA. He's going to be a nice combo type guard, but there's still something missing as far as that goes. And I think that, those big guys chasing Nairn around, it would just wear them down. And you look at Valentine at the end of the game, Valentine missed a dunk. Valentine was extremely short on the shot before regulation, the shot to win the game at the end of regulation. And those are things that come from being fatigued. And so I think he was worn down a little. When you look at it, in games that ended in losses or that were within 10 points, he plays like 38 minutes a game. And
yep.
It wears you down. They need Nairn, if for no other reason, to take the pressure off of Valentine.
I totally agree with that. And, Valentine is playing almost the whole entire game. And with Tum Tum there, you know, you don't have to do that. I mean, yes, Valentine's obviously going to play about 30 minutes a game regardless, but at the same time, you know, Tum-Tum can give him the rest.
He's not bringing the ball up the floor against the press, and, right. Yeah, he's not setting
exactly.
up everything. He's trying to make himself open or set a back screen for Forbes to get open. And, I mean, that takes a lot less off you than, like, staying locked in on that, and then you have to turn around and guard one of the better perimeter guys because Forbes and Harris have struggled on defense.
They
need Nairn to take the pressure off of Valentine, if anything else. We got about less than 5 minutes left, actually. I want to talk about Alvin Ellis because I think what I said about Josh Jackson earlier, I think what Alvin Ellis has done this year has eliminated Josh Jackson from the equation next year. Because everyone was talking before the season that if anybody transfers out, it's probably going to be Alvin Ellis. There's not really anybody else. Kyle Arnes, Izzo wanted him to redshirt, but he didn't. He's only a true freshman, so he's going to give it at least another shot, more than likely. There's no one else who was really going to head out. Deontay Davidson for the NBA, but I think he showed a little bit last night and during the Michigan game that he's not ready for it. Just because he couldn't hang with Irvin, and the thing about the NBA is there are a lot of stretch fours, and he's just not big enough to hang with it because he got bodied up by Swanigan pretty hard a few times last night. Alvin Ellis was supposed to be the odd man out. He played very well against Purdue. He's played pretty good as of late. The problem is he's only getting limited minutes. But I can see that changing if he continues to play the way that he is, and I can see that ultimately impacting whether or not Michigan State has a scholarship for the kid.
Tyler, I agree with you that Alvin Ellis has played great. At the same time, Josh Jackson is a guy you find room for. I mean, it's just, the guy is one of the best prospects, high school prospects to come out in a while. I think if Josh Jackson wants to come, they're finding room for him. I think Alvin Ellis has played great, and I think that he will be there next year. But at the same time, Alvin Ellis he's played great defense the last few games, hit a couple big shots last night. But your Josh Jackson point, I just think that's a guy you absolutely make room for, and if he wants to come, they will figure it out.
So, if he wants to come, they need a scholarship. Deontay Davis thinks he needs another year of seasoning. Who's out? Who's the odd man out, then, in your opinion?
Clark hasn't done much this year. I'm not sure, I'm not sure who would be the odd man out, but I just don't see a way, anyway, if Josh Jackson wants
Javon
to come to Michigan State. I think Clark, he's been... Yeah, he hasn't played that well this year, but I don't know who it's going to be, but they'll figure it out. There's just no way you don't take a guy like Josh Jackson. I think Tom Izzo knows that.
Right, and I'm right there with you. I guess Javon Best has kind of faded away, though. He faded away so much he kind of slipped my mind when we were talking about it. So I guess Javon Best may be that guy, but starting with Ellison, I think ultimately, that may end up hampering how Izzo finds a scholarship if it doesn't hamper Jackson getting one altogether. But that does it for us today. For Ryan McCumber and Tyler Hayward, this was the iSports Tennessee Red Peter Report.